Hello, and welcome to episode 1282 of The Sleeper and the Bus. It is Friday, April 12th. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined this morning by Justin Mason. Justin, good morning, sir.
If you say so.
It's not that good.
No,
my bench is killing it.
Yeah, your bench is amazing. Yeah.
You know, Colton Cowser, I'm very happy that he's great. I didn't start him this week. You know, this is the classic process over results. And it's obviously so much easier to guide people on that notion than to take it yourself, right? Like when you have to look in the mirror and be like, process over results. You know, you put in the guy that was playing the most games, and we didn't know Colton Cowser was going to explode in Fenway. It's still tough. But, you know, after the jokes and the memes and everything, you know, I got Edward Julian on the bench as well, hitting two homers the other day. There is something to be said for having good players on your bench, right, Justin? Like, if you never have bench guys pop off, there's one of probably two things, right? You're having a perfect year, and you're making all the best moves, and every time you're switching guys in, they're the ones popping off, and you're sitting the guy, your other quality players when they're having a little bit of a downturn. Or you have a bad bench, right? Like, if this never happens, don't you just have a bad bench? And so
yeah,
there's something to be said for having a good bench. And part of this is copium. I freely admit, you know, I'm huffing some copium here to deal with all these homers and ribbies on my bench. Justin, it would have been worth 22 points.
Yeah. It's that's brutal. I mean, like I told you, at least it's not on somebody else's team, right?
Exactly. Like, Cowser's on my team. Edward Julian's on my team. Jeff Hoffman with a win and a save on my team.
Yeah.
At least, and it could be worse.
It could be worse. I dropped Jeff Hoffman in a number of leagues.
So he's going to go for, did you drop him this past Sunday?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's going to go for something big this weekend with a win and a save, especially if he gets another save over the weekend. He's going to go for big bucks. And then I know Cowser is available, I think, in like one main. I think somebody messaged me.
Dropped in 16 mains, not this last weekend, but the weekend before.
Our boy Bloomer dropped him.
I picked him up for $17 this week.
Wow. So this is like one of those ones where it's like, when it's your guy, it of course seems insane to you, right? Mm-hmm. And I love Colton Cowser, so I'm like, how could you ever have dropped him? But like, I get it. He was not playing. People have position needs, and he was the one that they thought was expendable. He's now 97%, so that's probably one, maybe two leagues max that he's still available in. This is obviously very niche. We're not trying to necessarily advise people on this because it's only one person in the main that's going to get him. But what do you think he's going to go for in that league? Or two? I don't know. How many leagues are there? 850? 850 people? Oh, there's 57 leagues times 93. Okay, there's actually four leagues then.
Yeah. Not mine, because he's on.
He's on my team. So what do you think Colton Cowser is going to go for in those four mains on average?
I'd say $130, something like that.
I think it's going to be way higher.
It could be. It absolutely could be.
I think the max one will be at least $300.
Yeah.
I think the average could be around there, especially if he keeps it going this weekend. That is going to be a frenzy. They're going to they're hosting Milwaukee. So Peralta, Hall, Joe Ross, two righties and a lefty. You know, Peralta's awesome, of course, but he is making mincemeat out of the Boston rotation, which is pretty good. Although doing a lot of damage off their bullpen as well. But hey, Milwaukee gonna have to use their bullpen guys at some point. So yeah, Cowser looking great. What about the folks that are bidding in shallower leagues where he's definitely more available, and understandably so, because in a 12-teamer, there was not great reason to just automatically hold Cowser. There might be a few savvy people out there who, again, he was their guy, so they were kind of biding their time. Where are you at in a 12-teamer with Cowser? Let's say you've got the $1,000 budget, like a RotoWire Online Championship.
Where he's available in mine right now. I probably wouldn't go over $60 or $70, but okay. I know that he will go for over that. So
let's step back a quick moment on Cowser. Do you think he has fought his way into the everyday left field role right now, where he's going to have like occasional sits against lefties, but almost certainly has usurped Hayes? Do you believe that for Couser?
I don't know if I believe it yet.
Okay.
I'm hopeful, and I'm going to operate right now as if he has.
Okay.
But just like Hayes started off the season ice cold and lost the job, Couser could do the same, right? True. Couser could go through a 2-week stretch.
Also brings good defense, though.
Yeah, that's a super helpful part. And Hayes is not an amazing defender or anything like that.
You know who needs to be looking over his shoulder? Is your boy said.
How dare you?
I know, but like right now, I think the fact that he is a true center fielder and the only one that's like true bona fide center fielder on the roster is really helping Cedric Mullins. Because, and he's not playing terribly, by the way. Two homers, two steals, 101 WRC plus. Like, he's not been horrendous. But I'm just saying, if Mullins went cold and they thought that they could, you know, get away with Couser out there to get the improvements, I think that could be another avenue for Couser's playing time. But I believe in him as a full-time player. I think I'd get to triple digits in a 12-teamer.
Yeah, I understand that. I don't love doing triple-digit bids, period, but especially in a 12-teamer where, like, you are really just going to be churning the back half of that roster anyways.
But can't you then go in on guys that you really think could be game-changers because you know that so much stuff is cheap throughout the year?
I think you can, but there are going to be other game changers coming up too. So
true.
And do you want to be able to pivot for a position of need or a category of need?
I want the one who can give me almost a full season of production here. Like, we're 10 games in and Couser, you know, again, we're talking the best outcomes here. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That nothing's guaranteed. We don't want to take one series and say, you know, that he is the greatest player or anything. But, you know, when you are making those bids and, hey, I'm the one who's been hitting the drum of, like, don't get caught up in the full season, worry about shorter periods of time. But I think if you're low triple digits on a 1,000 budget, if you really believe in Couser, I don't think that's going to cripple you even if it flopped. Because 12-teamer prices are usually so low that, like, you're still going to be able to get a lot of quality players over here.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm at with
it. I could understand it. How are people who spent $500 on Victor Scott feeling right now?
I didn't say $500 though.
I'm not saying you did.
Triple digits. Did he go for $500?
Yeah, in an OC.
Okay. Well, I mean, the problem was that wasn't good before. Like, even dreaming.
He went for over $300 in 5 OCs.
Yeah, see, but with all due respect, that was never a good idea.
Yeah.
Neither, you know, when it was happening, like even in the dream scenario, like we're doing right now with Couser, the dream scenario for Couser has some realism to it. I don't think you can dream up a world where
people spent $500 on Ellie De La Cruz last year, and Ellie was great
on all
stolen bases, but did it because it hamstrung you the rest of the year. I want to see how many people who spent that actually won their leagues.
I don't know if you have to win the league, but if it like fundamentally changed your outlook and steals gave you power. Now, did it hurt in average? Like, I'm sure you gained enough in steals. Like, getting somebody 35 steals in 98 games, depending on how stratified your steals standings were, should be enough to boost you to counter the 235. Because 235 isn't even that horrendous of a batting average. You know, if it's like 200, that's one thing. I got to believe, even as somebody who, you know, was not paying the second round price and all that, being a little nervous about Ellie, I got to believe he was still a net benefit at the big dollars. But again, we're not talking that high for Couser. You know, it's funny. I'm looking at these Victor Scott bids, and one person got him twice for over 300, and both times he cut Colton Couser. Sorry, I'm not trying to like be nasty, and that's why I'm not like, you know, I'm not gonna name who it was or anything. Like, I'm not trying to go at people. I'm just saying
that's to me, choice. Like the rough part on a lot of those bids are like the backup bids, like someone going 375 yes. and the backup bid being 63.
None of these backups are close to these yeah. high on the high dollar ones.
And the that's closest how you know. Is still over 100 off.
Yeah. Like, that's how you know you just went, you went way too high with it. Again, when did that make sense? I'm not trying to be like revisionist here, but on Victor Scott, he was always like, first off, he's an Estuary Ruiz, which, yeah, can get you a lot of steals, but can't really hit. His playing time was not guaranteed for much more than like a period of time with guys coming mm-hmm. back. Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, anyway, I don't want to beat a dead horse. We got it. But let's talk some two-star pitchers after I'm done mourning my missed stats. And you know, by the way, that Cowser's going to go cold this weekend because he's back in my lineup. So that will be fun to watch him come down from the
hot streak. Hey, you should bench him for the rest of us.
I'm not going to do that. I'm absolutely not
going to. You are a poor, poor individual.
I will drag everyone down with me as he goes cold for all of us. But let's talk some two-star guys. Again, we go through the two-star list, kind of give an idea of where we're at with them. Don't worry about the studs, because do we really need to tell you that that we're starting? I don't know. I mean, even somebody like who does have a little bit of concern running, but like, are you not starting Joe Musgrove? No. George Kirby? No. So I don't put those guys on there. And even somebody like a Merrill Kelly. You start Merrill Kelly. He's got two great years under his belt. I don't think you're making decisions there. So you might not hear somebody on this list and you're like, he has a two-star. Why did they bring him up? Because it seems obvious. In fact, I got a couple obvious guys on there that I have to cross off. So let's start with this first one. This one is brutal, Justin. This is why the best laid plans, you know, the rain can really screw it up. Remember when we talked about Reynaldo Lopez last week?
Yeah. He had a great two-step.
You know, it's tough to appear on the two-step list 2 weeks in a row because it doesn't happen, which means he got moved off of the Mets at Miami two-step that he had, which was, like you said, going to be amazing. And now he gets at Houston, home to Texas.
Yeah.
That is
brutal.
Really brutal. Really, really brutal. So they're just with the rain, he gets all the way skipped this weekend. Or I guess just pushed back one day. But even still, like, he had the start against the Mets. Let me see how it went, actually. And it went well. So, you know, the first half was laid out nicely. So at least you got that, you know, especially if you started him in like a 10 where he's not always being started. Reynaldo Lopez gave you the good start against the Mets, but instead of getting at Miami, head on over to Houston and then host Texas. What are you doing with Raylo?
I mean, I think in 15s, you're obviously starting.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think in 10s and 12s, you probably should. Unless you have just great options to kind of put in there, but.
Is this because you're not worried? Sorry to cut you off. Is this because you're not worried about Houston?
I'm not as worried about Houston, and we just saw what JP Sears just did to Texas. Like, neither team are operating like on full kind of, I don't know, strength right now in terms
Texas
of
Texas scares me.
Yeah, no, I mean, both teams scare me, but yeah, like
Texas two-step here.
You also look at like what Reynaldo Lopez has done over the course of spring training and then into the season. And sure. We're talking about a guy who, you know, striking out almost a batter an inning. He's not giving up a home run, and he's keeping the walks at, you know, 11%. Like, that's like, you can live with that, especially when he's not giving up home runs. This could go badly. This could go really badly. And so if you are protecting ratios, then I totally understand not doing it. But
I don't know why you're protecting ratios this early in the season, though.
I like to protect my ratios at all times.
I mean, you want to be smart about them, but protecting them is different. Protecting them is like no unnecessary risks. That's something that I think you do like a lot later in the season. I mean, listen, maybe I'm just careless.
I think there's a
very strong possibility that I'm just careless. And
yeah, that's definitely true. But I mean, I think there's, it's kind of a catch-22, because for me, I'd rather not have to like throw like, like really look for those two start guys to like make up for things later on in the season, because there's just less options because guys got hurt, you know, the better pitchers are rostered. And so part of me tends to want to protect my ratios a little bit early, so I don't have to make those leaps later. At the same time, the lower ERAs are in the colder weather earlier on in the season. Yeah. So you're actually, you know, like, and Todd Zola is the one who pointed this out to me. You know, it's like, so you probably should take more chances early on.
Part of why I do.
Yeah. I just know, like, for me last year, Brady Singer and Michael Kopech destroyed my ratios early on. And
you can't let two instances, though, completely. I mean, you can, but it is in fact incorrect. Yes,
it is incorrect. So, yeah, I mean, you probably should be rolling with Lopez unless you have like amazing other options. But it does scare me a little.
I'm going to save the commenters because they're going to not appreciate that you said that this Texas two-step isn't, you know, they're not functioning on all cylinders here. Texas sixth in WOBA against righties, Houston ninth. So you got to be careful here. I love Raylo. I think in a 10, I'm not necessarily doing it. I think I got to have like a real reason behind it. 15, I agree. I'm with it. You know, it's tough, but you got to swallow that pill, I think, and go for
it. The hard part is there's not like a bunch of amazing two-step starters this week. Like we're not like,
it's tough.
Like
find a good one start guy. Yeah, but maybe you just find a good one start then, and you be careful here. But I think in 12s, it's borderline like 60-40, 60 toward 40 no. And then I'm probably more 70 no, 30 yes.
Would you rather start a one-start Brady Singer versus the White Sox than a two-start Ronaldo Lopez?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think so. In those shallower formats. Yeah. But again, in a 15... I think I am going to ride with Raylo. Cole Irvin hosts Minnesota and goes to KC. And we've talked a bunch about KC. Not as easy of a park as we thought. Although the one thing it does suppress is homers, and that's Cole Irvin's biggest issue. So maybe we can use that a little bit in his favor. But this KC lineup, they are playing well, and we are respecting them. And then Minnesota coming to Baltimore, you know, they're not off the charts, but it's a team that I definitely respect. I think they're a quality lineup. But where are you at on Cole Irvin? We saw what taking him to Fenway can do. What do you think about these two situations?
Remember when everybody was all hyped on him in spring?
Yeah, he was raising his velo, right?
Yeah, then the velo is pretty much what it was last year. I mean, it's like half a pickup or something like that right now. So maybe if he gains as the season goes on, he'll have had one more mile per hour. But he's not throwing 95 right now. And he is who he always has been, which is not a very good pitcher.
Would you say he is who we thought he was?
Yeah. And we let him off the hook. Yeah, we absolutely did. You know, that's like 15 years old.
I know, dude. My references suck, bro.
I love it.
So old. I'm going to do playoffs. I'm going to do, we're talking about practice. I'm going to do my wife. Like, I am such
I'm turning 40 this year. So,
and you're a man.
And I'm a man. Yeah.
You should use, I used it all throughout the year that I was 40, I couldn't stop saying it about everything. It's fantastic. But Cole Irvin, it sounds like you're leaning away.
Yeah, that's a no for me.
So then he needs to be cut, right? Because if you can't start him in a two-step, the hell you holding him for, right?
Yeah. I mean, to me, I don't necessarily prescribe to that all the time. I think you can.
It's not a universal. I think it's a first cut, though. It's a first look of like, okay, do I need to be having this guy on the roster then?
Yeah, you should definitely, especially in 15s, like you should be looking for other guys. So
you need to figure out.
And like, he shouldn't have been rostered in 10 and 12s anyways. So
yeah, I don't think he was. Yeah, like I don't think I'm in on it either. I guess I just, that means that like we're not doing anything with Cole Irvin then.
No.
Because if we can't start him here, like he really is just not anywhere for us. Okay.
Agreed.
That's fair enough. All right. So Garrett Whitlock, not sure I had to include him. In fact, he and Cutter Crawford have the same two-step. Cutter, I took off. Whitlock, I could probably don't need to, but I want to see where you're at in the shallower formats because the ERA is great, 126, but the whip's 119, which is still a decent whip, but it does not match with that ERA, right? It says that that ERA is going to go up because he is walking 10%. So, and the swing strike rate's down to 8%. So those two things just gave me a little pause to at least check with you on the shallower formats. In 15s, I don't think you can really bench Whitlock. I should say the matchups, by the way, it's Cleveland and at Pittsburgh. But what about in those 10s and 12s with Garrett Whitlock? Are you still there with him?
I don't know. The swing strike rate is like under 8% right now, which doesn't make me feel really confident that he's going to keep that 27% strikeout rate.
Certainly.
He's giving up a crap ton of in-zone contact. 92%.
He's good history on the swing strike rate, though. Just, and people are hoping that he can kind of get back to it. Like, he's a 13, 14% kind of guy. So if he gets back to his previous levels, then his strikeout rate is real. But you're talking about the end zone contact.
Yeah.
But it's been a little fortunate to only give up a 212 batting average right now.
Yeah. So especially with the walk rate, like, I think I'm still rolling with him in 15s and in 10s and 12s. He's a team streamer for me. Like, the swing strike rate in the last outing was at 11%. So, like, that is maybe, hey, it was just a little bit of cold weather or just, like, you know, they started on the road. So they went from, you know, being in Florida for spring training to doing a West Coast swing. So maybe he was a little thrown off by that. So I'm not, like, cutting him anywhere.
No.
But he's not an instant start for me in 10s and 12s.
I think that's fair. I lean yes. I'm probably like a 65-35 yes on Whitlock across the board. Well, higher in 15s. It's 100-0, really. I don't see a world where I would sit him. Maybe even closer to 75-25. I think I'm getting him in there, but I just want to talk through him a little bit, see where you're at, see if the walk rate and the down swinging strike rate was a negative for you at all with Whitlock enough to sit him. You're saying you can find some sits. That's if you got a really deep rotation and everything and you can afford to kind of be a little picky. But for the most part, I think we're both getting him in there.
Yeah.
All right, Cal Quantrill, your boy. Actually, I skipped Kyle Hendricks, who's Cal Quantrill's uncle, basically. They do the same shit. At Arizona and home to Miami.
You can keep skipping Kyle Hendricks.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I'm not starting him either in any format. I'm not even rostering him in 15s then, because for that, like, it's the Cole Irvin thing. In a 15, if you're not starting him in a two-step, that's really where that litmus test comes into play, the two-step litmus
test. There's just, to me, like, a guy like Kyle Hendricks, there's not enough upside to warrant the downside. Like, he can just get hit around by too many teams.
Yep.
And even, like, let's say he has two really good starts. So you're talking, like, hey, he goes out there and throws 12 scoreless innings over, you know, in total over these two starts. You might get, like, 6 strikeouts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like that, you know, and maybe one win because you going up against Miami. Like, to me, like, that doesn't warrant the potential, like, 13 ERA that you could get over the course of, like, you know, 10 innings or whatever it is. So I'm not ever starting Kyle Hendricks. It would take a really, really weird scenario where I'm feeling comfortable about starting Kyle Hendricks.
Same. He needs to come around and, like, show me something. Because here's the thing. He's not even doing his Kyle Hendricks stuff. 5% swinging strike rate, you know, and I get 429 BABIP and 57% left on base rate. Those are going to come down. I'm not saying he's the 1208 ERA guy we've seen, but even if you give him his Sierra at 459 with a lack of Ks and, you know, decent chance at win, I respect the Cubs, but, like, nah, I just can't get there. I'm not with it for Kyle Hendricks anywhere. So Cal Quantrill goes to Philly and then comes back to Colorado. Who cares who's hosting there? It is Seattle, but right? Like, there's just no way.
No.
Okay. Just making sure. Eric Fetty had some buzz coming over from the KBO. You know, I actually haven't had a chance to watch him, so I'm just going off of the stats. 430 ERA, 143 whip. A little bit better than what he was. 12% strikeout minus walk, though. 6% swinging strike rate. So just not missing any more bats. He gets Kansas City and a trip to Philly. That seems a little dicey for me. What do you think about Eric Fetty.
The Kansas City one just scares me, and it's amazing that we're even, yeah, it's amazing. Like, I know I was like big on Kansas City on, but the, it's roads, still funny. Yeah, it's still funny for me to say, like, just,
well, they're on fire now too.
Yeah, they are. They just, what they did to Hunter Brown was criminal. so like,
it was really mean.
Again, another one of these like spring quote unquote standouts that people got really excited about, in Eric Fetty, that is still throwing the same velocity that he did 5 years ago in the majors, and in the minors. So like, sometimes these guys throwing hard in spring, they're just competing for a job. Like I understand.
How high was his velo?
I want to say it was like throwing like 96 or something like that.
Oh damn.
In spring. But not doing that anymore, throwing like 93. He doesn't look bad. He's looked fine. Like, he's not,
but he didn't bring his KBO goodness over yet.
And we're talking about a White Sox team
that was like, my next point.
At this point, like, I mean, I don't know if you have the White Sox lineup up in front of you. If you don't bring it up.
I try not to look at graphic material while we're podcasting.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Like, could you name the bottom half of the White Sox lineup right now?
The one guy I can think that's in there is Lenin Sosa.
Oh, okay. Like, I couldn't even do that. Like, I mean,
Tigers played them recently, so I have a little cheat. I watched the Bibee start against them, which he did not do very well, which really pissed me off. So yeah, I got a little bit of a cheat code there, but I just, that's the one guy that sticks out to me that you were probably now, like, wow.
The bottom half of the lineup right now is Dominic Fletcher, Braden Shoemake, Nicky Lopez, and Martin Maldonado.
Jesus.
And it's, here's less the thing, than ideal. You just mentioned Sosa. He's hitting second for this team.
Sick. No, like literally sick.
Like, the top half ain't that much better than the bottom half. So, no. Like, not going to be a lot of wins to be had on this show.
That's
Chicago
the thing.
Team.
And so, if you're like, not getting Ks,
unless
the ratios are
Crochet, I don't really want to start a White Sox starter.
Crochet, you take the lack of win potential because ratios and Ks, a lot of goodness there. But everything else with it, I just can't get there with them.
I should do an article at the end of the season where it's like building like the best bad rotation possible. So like rotation of like the guys you could have gotten in fantasy, like that pitched really, really well, but because they were on bad teams, they actually didn't help you as much as you
my rotation last year.
Yeah. Like a JP Sears and a Garrett Crochet and
the best Angel.
Yeah.
Whoever that ends up being. Tyler. Yeah, Tyler Anderson looking nice so far. A couple of my Tigers here. And again, I think they're easy in 15s. So we are focused more on the 10s and 12s here with Reese Olson and Casey Mize. They get to host Texas and then they go to Miami. Where are you at on that with those two?
I mean, the problem with
Go to Minnesota. They go to Minnesota. Excuse me. Not Miami. They go to Minnesota. Vastly different.
I think it really depends on what your team construct is right now. Like who else, what are your other options? Because while like Reese Olson and Casey Mize, like when I write up my two starting pitchers for the week, like I do every Friday, like they would both be on like somewhere on my list, but neither of them have particularly high upsides. They're like, they're both kind of inning eaters, guys who aren't really going to hurt you. In 10 team leagues, like that's not always what you're looking for. You're looking for guys who can really shove. But those guys, they don't hurt you. Like, you know, I know Reese Olson's last start wasn't like amazing or anything like that, but like for the most part, like you're going to look at their line at the end of the season and go, yeah, they had a decent year.
Pretty solid floor. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't mind using them in 10s and 12s if I don't have better options. Like if I'm deciding between Reese Olson and Reynaldo Lopez, it's like kind of a 50-50 coin flip. I'm probably going to go Reese Olson at least 50, maybe more percent of the time, probably go Lopez over Casey Mize personally.
Yeah, I could see that. it's interesting dynamic to bring Raylo in with those two. I can totally see that. I think I'm generally starting both of them. Like I said, 15s, yes. 10s and 12s, like, they're on the table. I basically agree with where you're at. Where Raylo gets the edge for me is better win probability and higher strikeout potential. So I think I'm still Raylo ahead of both of them in all situations. But they're on the table in those shallower formats. And I, at the very least, I'm keeping both of them around because I want to see what's up with Casey Mize and Reese Olson. So they are team streamers for me right now. I know this is a no. I want to get your outlook on him because Spencer Arrighetti has Atlanta coming off of the massacre at KC. So again, I know it's a no, even with the at Washington on the weekend. But where are you on him? Because I don't think he necessarily... He is the first man out for Verlander. When's Verlander due back?
I think he's going to do one more start in the minors.
This is it for Arrighetti.
Probably.
Okay.
Arrighetti's set up for a two-start this week. The problem is, he could get the Atlanta start and then not be in the rotation.
No, that's the thing. You can't do it. So where are you at on him, kind of over the longer term then? Because he'll be the first man up again. Do you like Spencer Arrighetti at all? Is basically where I'm at.
No.
You don't?
No.
Not even a little? Okay. I kind of like him a little bit. Now, why? Obviously, that was a nightmare. Well, I mean, he's one of their best prospects. He can miss bats. Obviously, he looked terrible in this outing.
He can miss the zone, too.
Of course. He has control issues. I mean, welcome to pitching prospects. But, when you can miss bats at a pretty strong clip, there is some appeal there. The problem is the control. That's definitely an issue for him.
Double-digit walk rates all throughout the minor leagues, pretty much.
And I think he could be a spot starter at some point, though. He does need to figure out how to find the zone more consistently, though, or else it is going to be a real issue for Spencer Arrighetti. So the thing of it is, this is an easy... Don't even bid on him.
No.
Don't even bid on him, because you're not using him this week, and we don't know what's going to happen with Verlander working his way back. So I wouldn't even do a bid.
Yeah, he's going to have one more minor leagues rehab start this weekend. So Arrighetti will will get another start more than likely this weekend against Washington. So, if you're in a daily lineups league where you're not having to set at the beginning of the week, you skip the Atlanta one, and I guess you could go for...
you could.
But, Washington, they're a bad team. But, they've got some guys who can hit the ball. I think it's mostly a pitching issue.
When you walk guys like that, you elevate crummy teams. You give them those opportunities, and then you're pitching in trouble. So, the point that you brought up about Arrighetti, about his lack of control, is super valid. And so I don't want to dismiss that by saying, I've got some interest in him. It is not because I'm blind to that major walk problem that he has. So, we can revisit him if and when he comes back. But right now, he just walks too many. I might be doing a disservice to Seth Lugo by including him here. He might be in that, kind of automatic camp. But he is at the White Sox and hosting Baltimore. I think we're pretty good on him. But obviously, 15s, yes. Is there any... trepidation in 10s and 12s, or is he an automatic start for you pretty much everywhere?
I don't know if he's automatic because he isn't striking out a lot of guys, and it is Baltimore. And it's not Baltimore in Baltimore. So I think in 10s you could make the argument for other guys. I mean,
probably in 12s too, then, I guess.
Yeah, I think
but you keep him, right? Seth Lugo team streamer?
I think so. Especially with how good the Royals are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You can actually have win potential with the Royals. Yeah. Weird thing to say, but it is the truth. So, I'm with that for sure with Seth Lugo. Patrick Sandoval and Jose Soriano, they're taking trips to Tampa Bay and Cincinnati. Soriano, what's that?
No, thanks.
Okay.
I streamed Sandoval this week, and I've got to make a decision whether I'm going to drop him in a 15. Because I'm definitely not using him for this two-step.
So I told you my potential game plan. It didn't come to fruition. Okay. About dropping him to try to potentially plant the bomb on somebody. Now, you can't do that because they won't be able to pick them up.
Yeah. And I'm also not falling for that gambit myself. Like where
but I think somebody would pick him up.
Yeah, I think it would. Somebody will. I think somebody will. But I'm not starting him at Cincinnati. That feels like if it was like home versus Tampa, and then like away versus like even just like a mediocre team. Like trying to think of a good example of it. Feels like there's a bunch of really good teams and then a bunch of really bad teams.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, Minnesota. Like Minnesota is a perfect example. Yeah, yeah. Like that I would do. Like if it was home to the Rays and at Minnesota, I'm starting that to start. But at Cincinnati, that feels like a trap.
I mean, yeah, they haven't really gotten going, but I'm still duly afraid of them.
Yeah.
Like I am not trying to take guys. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. I'm not trying to take guys into Cincinnati. It's just a huge no thank you. I think I'm with that. I am definitely wanting to be careful here. Now, you say you might cut Soriano, so you don't have any love for him beyond this. Like this passes.
I'm saying I might cut Sandoval.
Sorry, that's what I meant to say. So this is a situation where you're like, well, I'm not using him for the two steps, so I might as well kick him to the curb type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something where I'm looking to continue to churn, right? Like, I mean, obviously it just depends on, and I can bring up my my waiver wire.
Because in a 15, you know, I don't know, I still got love for you guys know how I feel about Sandoval, so I don't need to get
I know, but it. You're blinded. This is
I'm blinded like, to his excellence.
Yeah, sure you are. Here's some interesting like would you rathers on
you make know, sure you guys. Give me some of your other who are some of your other potential cuts though too. Don't, it's not just Sandoval your only cut, right? Is this that kick-ass team with the great pitching?
This is my main event. So it's okay. Like,
all right, then just do Sandoval against some of these guys. Let's hear it.
I mean, right now, I'll give you my worst starting pitchers other than Trevor Williams, who is a cut this week. Right?
Yeah.
You got him. I can't imagine that I'm going to use
him. He gets Houston.
Yeah, I'm definitely not using him this week. So he's probably a cut. But here are some of the guys available in my main event, right?
Okay.
Edward Cabrera is coming off the IL.
Yeah. At least worth looking at.
Lance Lynn, who hates people who bunt. Did you see this?
I did not. What did he do? What did he get mad about someone bunting for?
He gave up a home run. And then the next hitter, I think it might have been Jazz Chisholm, bunted.
And he got mad.
And then he struck out like the next three guys to get out of the inning. And as he's walking off the mound, you can hear him screaming about the bunt. And call him the guy so a funny. Pussy and like
what a freak, dude.
He gave up a home run and then the guy got on base with a bunt.
That's such a freak thing to get mad about.
About the guy who just bunted as opposed to the fact he just gave up a home run.
That's hilarious.
So Lance Lynn's a psycho, but I will always love Lance.
Yeah. Lynn. Well, and he gets Oakland next week. So, you know, you're in one of the three leagues where he's going to be available. Mm-hmm. You do need to be looking at him, and I would go ahead and take him over Sandy, but Williams first. I still prefer Sandy to Williams. Okay. Who else?
So you also have, Alex Lang, who got a save. Well, Will Smith sucks now, so probably not. I think
MacArthur kind of running that show.
Is Ryan Weathers coming out of the rotation, or is he?
Wait, Lang didn't get a save.
He didn't last week.
Oh, he did last week. Okay, I thought you meant this week. I was like, he didn't get no save this week. Oh, wasn't that due to like availability?
It might have been availability thing.
But anyway,
He didn't get a save. Ben Brown, JP Sears available in my main.
What's Sears got coming up? Hang on, I got you. Sears gets St. Louis at home, okay, and then lines up for an at New York, at Baltimore two-step the following week. Yeah, good luck with that. Okay, hang on, though. Ben Brown, you're going to roast my man Arrighetti when Ben Brown walked 16% at AAA last year? Come on.
I'm just saying, these are the guys that are available that
I'm keeping Sandy over Ben Brown. Williams is your number one cut.
I might keep him too. I don't know. We'll see.
You might get two of these guys.
So, okay. But I also, you know, like being in a position like where I'm at, which I know a lot of people aren't in. So like, I'm not like trying to like humble brag it.
Yes, but you are. Fantasy gods, do your worst.
I think one of the things like that people sometimes overreact to is like, you know, like, oh, I got to keep churning, right? Like, and I may put some bids in on some of these guys, especially like a guy like Sears. Like, I really like JP Sears, right? So like, I will have a bid on him, in on him, even though I'm not necessarily anticipating using him for that two start of the Yankees in Baltimore, but just because I want him on my roster, he can become a team streamer. And, but I'm also like, this won't be a week where, like, let's say, for instance, last week I was dropping, you know, random reliever that I was, you know, like Jordan Leisure, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm hoping he was going to get saves. He's clearly not getting saves. So I'm dropping him. So my waterfall of, like, you know, backup bids was like, you know, 15 pitchers deep, right?
Because you wanted to get somebody.
To make sure I got someone because I wanted. This week on a guy like Sandoval, you know, Trevor Williams, my waterfall may be like 15. You know, deep, but on Sandoval, it may be three deep. And if I don't get one of the three guys that I think are better than him, I'm okay just keeping Sandoval.
Like, it was one deep for me last week with Sandoval. Remember, well, you know, to plant that bomb, it was just if I could get Cody Bradford, but he ended up going a little bit higher than I anticipated. 32, which is actually not a bad price, especially because we're gonna get to him when we get to Texas. He's staying in the rotation, folks. So, yeah, okay. I get it. But when Sandoval's cooking, you know I'm going to rub that in your face every time. Jose Soriano, real quick. I know we're probably not going after him this week with trips to Tampa Bay and Cincinnati. Did you get to see any of the start, though? I know it wasn't good statistically, but I feel like he did show some foundation of how he can be successful. Our buddy Nick Pollock is a fan. I don't know. He throws 100. He's staying on my watch list. That's the best I can do right now for Soriano. But I'm at least moderately intrigued. It's a three pitch mix with the fastball, curveball, slider. Throws 100, and you know, wasn't horrible in that start, despite giving up 4 runs in 4 innings. Do you like Jose Soriano at all?
Is it a slider or is it a split finger? Because we have it classified as a split.
Yeah, that's what I saw, was that it was a splitty.
So, you know,
either honestly, way, it's still three pitches.
Honestly, I have not watched the start. So this is going to be one of those situations where I actually need to sit down and watch before I can like go too deep into it.
That's totally fair.
One of my concerns is he does throw that fastball quite a bit. So, even though it's 100, like, people are like, if he can't mix his pitches a little bit better, then people are just going to stay on the 100. Go ahead.
And you'll see it when you watch the start. Only 40% in the start.
Okay.
58% for the year. A little misleading because 91% in his first relief outing, 61% in his second relief outing. For the start, he went 40-40 on the fastball curve, 20 on the splitty. So Jose Soriano was mixing up, because it's a fair point there, you know, overdoing the fastball. But he was mixing up. He got beat up in the first real bad, 3 runs on 3 hits. And then, you know, just over the next 3 innings, only 1 more run on 2 hits with 5 Ks. So I thought he settled down, you know, again, just kind of on my watch list. And I'm intrigued by him. That's all. I'm not picking him up for this week. There's no reason to do. Although, if you got a free spot and you want to gamble, the only reason I might pick him up this week is in case he pops off on the two-step, then Jose Soriano is going to be, you know, triple digits next week type of deal going against Minnesota. So if you wanted to pre-spec, that would be my only reason to possibly pick him up this week. All right. AJ Puck and Edward Cabrera. You mentioned Cabrera coming back. Puck.
I'm not starting either of these guys.
Okay. It's a Giants and at the Cubs just for posterity, but you're not starting either, but you do want Cabrera.
I'm interested in Cabrera. Like I've never been on the Cabrera bandwagon. I think a lot of other people have been really big Cabrera fans. I've never seen in him what other people have.
I was on the Sixto train. That was, you know,
I was on the
not
Trevor
Rogers train. Not that they were opposing trains, because I was on the Trevor Rogers
train. No, they all derailed in the same spot. Yeah. So for a little bit for different reasons.
Yeah.
I've never trusted Edward Cabrera's ability to command and control things. The stuff is great. I'm rarely starting a guy, even in a two-step, coming off of an injury, because I just don't know. Like, I mean, it's really 1.5 starts, because you got to think that first start, at least he's not going five.
That's why I couldn't get Aaron Ashby this week. I was coming off of, and even Wade Miley, a guy I like and would normally like want to go four. He was coming off injury. I didn't know what his first start was going to be. So yeah, I'm totally with that.
That Cubs offense is really good. Like that. So yes. If it was flipped and I was all like, oh, it's probably a half start versus the Cubs and a full start versus my Giants, I might actually consider that. But because it's the Giants first, like I'm not starting.
Yeah. So you get the 3 to 4 innings against them, against the Giants, when you want him to get the longer start there. So yeah, totally vibe with all that on Cabrera and Puck. Honestly, you could say a lot of the same stuff. Has no command and control, has intriguing stuff when it's working. He's looked like a nightmare so far.
I can't imagine he's staying in the rotation. I don't even know if he should be
holding his damn spot right now. He has a negative 10% strikeout to walk ratio in 3 starts. So yeah, I'm not starting either of them. No. If you want to hold Puck because you believed in him and you want to give more than 3 starts and see what's what, I respect that. You know, I got my pet players as well, Patrick Sandoval, but I'm not starting him anywhere. Joe Ross gets a start against San Diego at home and then a trip to St. Louis. Any love for Joe Ross on Milwaukee?
No.
Okay, not even in 15s?
No.
I've been a Ross Brothers fan, Tyson then Joe, for ages. Yeah, I'm not really into it either.
More of a Jeff Ross fan.
Jeff Ross, yeah, the Ross Master. Yeah. It could be in a waterfall in a 15. Joe Ross could, like, where he's way down there.
Do you feel comfortable starting him versus these two teams, though? Like,
no, but another one, it'd be a pre-spec. If he does well, okay. Although he has the Yankees the following week, so maybe not. I don't know. Like, San Diego, I'm kind of nervous about them. Trip to St. Louis, you know, I like the park, but I respect that lineup. Newt Barr coming back. Yeah, no, I'm not looking to start him. I'm not. And when we say waterfall, it's just the list of bids that Jeff Erickson terms the waterfall. I think because there's a water droplet to click to do an action in the NFBC thing.
Yeah.
So he could get deep in my list. Joe Ross, like if you're talking about how you're cutting Trevor Williams and you got to get somebody, if I got to get a body, it could be Joe Ross for me, but he's going to be deep down. Louis Varlin gets a trip to Baltimore and then hosts the Tigers. Is the Tigers start appealing enough to take the trip to Baltimore? You know, you got the wall there, but they can hit to other parts of the park.
I mean, Varlin's biggest issue is home runs, and he's going, like, even though it's a bad matchup, like, he's going to probably the best park to hit in to prevent home runs. I don't know what the park factors are exactly.
Oh, the home run park factor has changed massively for right-handers. By the way, against the Dodgers, 3 scoreless and then gave up the 6 in the last 2 innings. Now, that doesn't make it better or anything. I'm not bringing that up for that, but like, it wasn't just a constant beating. It's like once they kind of wore him down a bit, they got to him and beat him up.
And it's the Dodgers, so like I'm not like
you shouldn't have started him anyway.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't have started him at all.
So if you did, you kind of got what you deserve. But yeah, it was a 3-run homer to Will Smith and a 3-run homer to James Outman. So 2 bad pitches really got him there. I'm starting Louis Varlin here. I'm in on him 15s, maybe some 12s. Probably don't need 2 in 10s. Probably got enough pitching.
I think it depends on what you're looking for. But I mean, he's still throwing 96. And
yeah. Bottom line is I'm still in.
I'm as in as I've been, which isn't like all the way in. I'm just like kind of hanging out in the back of the bandwagon. I'm definitely not driving the train.
No, guys, I'm here. I'm here. Okay. Like you're on your phone. You're like, no, I'm here. I'm here.
I still think there are a lot of reasons to be concerned on a guy like Varlin when you give up as many home runs as him. And one of the issues with Varlin right now, obviously just right now, is he's walking guys. Like he's walking 5/9 right now. So
yeah, we can't have that. Because to fit the model that they have, it's high Ks, low walks, and then you can live with the high homers a little bit. But if you're walking 11% or 5/9, as you said, that can't work for Varland. So he needs to rein that in. It is two starts. We're not going to freak out. Yeah. At the very least, even if you are a little uncomfortable here, I would still hold. This would be one where you would pass my litmus test of, yes, I'm not starting him in a two-step, say if you're
in a 12-teamer.
I don't. Is it bad?
I don't know.
It's the Angels. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, you're holding for the Angels.
If you don't want to start at Baltimore. But in a weekly, I think you take the Detroit start and you eat it in Baltimore to get the Detroit
start. Especially because it's in Baltimore. If we were talking about this being in Minnesota, maybe I might say something else. But
agreed.
In Baltimore, I think you take that gamble.
So bottom line on Varland, we're starting in 15s. We're pretty close to it in 12s. 10s, you don't really need to. If you're even holding him, maybe you can. But he's kind of up and down right now in 10s.
I think that's right.
Adrian Hauser gets Pittsburgh and at the Dodgers. Two great lineups. No, I don't know if Pittsburgh gets great lineup tag yet. I just wanted to say that. We are Pittsburgh fans here. We're rooting for
the upstart. Why are we talking about Adrian Hauser?
We're not. But no, any love for him beyond massively difficult matchups here? Okay.
No.
This is one of the ones where it's like shallower leagues, because if you got Rodon, you got to start him in the deeper leagues. But he goes to Toronto and hosts Tampa Bay. Are you still starting him in 10s? I think 12s you have to, too. 12s and 15s, I just don't think you have a choice, personally. You might disagree on Rodon, but I think you have to start him in those leagues. So I'm only asking you about 10s.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're starting him in 15s for sure. And then in
12s, too. 12s, right?
I think.
You gotta.
Why do you don't have to? I mean,
you paid a relative premium. I know some people balk at the notion of like just because you paid something for somebody.
Yeah, I mean, throw that, prices out the window for the most part, especially when you're making your week to week start.
Not yet. Like, I disagree. That doesn't start to happen until we get a real sample to go off of. First off, I might also add that Carlos Rodon has a 1.72 ERA. So, like, let's not pretend that he's even killing it.
10% walk rate and 147
whip. And a horrendous whip. I get it. But don't act like he's just getting his face caved in left and right either.
No.
I don't think you can sit him in a 12. Why did you draft him?
I didn't.
You know what I mean. If you have him, why'd you draft him if you're not starting him in a two-step this quickly?
I think it just depends on your other options. Now, that being said, like, you're probably starting him. This one just feels, and it shouldn't feel that bad because, like, I don't think Tampa Bay is hit particularly well against lefties.
Gotcha.
Toronto's
eighth and Tampa Bay's 22nd in Wolves.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So that's, so I think I'm probably rolling with it in a 12. I don't think I'm rolling with a 10. Like, he's not getting strikeouts at the rate that, even close to the rate that we're used to seeing from him.
Yeah. Six he's last out.
Walking way too many guys.
That's a bummer. Yep.
I feel like that as. Honestly,
it's the proverbial.
I don't think I'm starting him in 12s. I can really
dodge. I am. It's the proverbial dodge and raindrops for Carlos Rodon. He's putting on a lot of base runners and they're not scoring right now. I just, again, maybe it's because you didn't draft him. So, yeah, I didn't either, by the way.
Fun weekly board bet. Under 4 ERA for the week.
The problem is, I understand you would, because you're not starting him.
Yeah.
I'm of the mind that he could have over and it would still be a good, I would say 450 would be the number. Because if he goes 6-3 both times with 11 Ks and a win, I think that was worth starting, even with a 450 ERA.
I mean, he's got 13 Ks on the year and 3 starts.
He had 6 last time out against Arizona with 12 swinging strikes.
No board bet. It's fine. We'll revisit. Let's revisit after.
I'm starting Rodon, though. I think this is a litmus test check, though. Like, however this week goes, then you're starting to make some decisions. Two more starts will be at 5, and if we're seeing no progress, if he erases the progress from the Miami start, then we really start to assess things difficultly. Even after this week, though, in a 15, I still don't think you cut him, even if he gets bombed out.
No, I mean, at 15, I think you're kind of stuck.
Exactly. Ross Stripling hosts St. Louis and gets a trip to Cleveland. Our boy, you know, we've been a longtime Stripling fan. I actually almost clicked on LA to find him, too, by the way. He hasn't been on LA in forever. You know, he hasn't really done much this year. This is a deep league only situation. Any love for our boy Strip anymore?
Just another example of a guy throwing a new pitch and looking better in spring. It just doesn't like this. Like,
he was good against Boston. He went 7 innings, 1 run ball.
Yeah.
He got nicked up in the other two pretty good. Texas got to him for 6, and Cleveland busted him up for 5, 4 of which were earned in just 5 innings of work.
I will say the underlying metrics are much better than the on the surface metrics.
That's the only reason I asked about him for deep leagues with Stripling, because I figure, you know, this is a quality veteran who can pop off here and there, but it's still, you know, just an 11% strikeout minus walk.
Yeah, it's 7.5% swing and strike rate, like a 172 whip. The XERA and the FIP and XFIP are much better than the RA, but I don't think the upside warrants the downside.
Correct, because you're begging for like a 450 ERA, so 2 baseline quality starts with like 9 Ks.
Yeah,
and you take a win if you get it. You can't even you can't even put that on the book. So yeah, the upside just isn't there for Stripling. And
the A's have already won a game this month for one of their starting pitchers, so they're not due for another month.
True. I didn't want to put this guy on here, but he looks horrendous, dude. This is in the Rodon territory of like, in deeper leagues, you got to ride it out. You paid way too big a price for Aaron Nola. And again, I think that matters early on where you still have to stick with them. I don't think you can jump off after 3 starts for somebody you bought in like the 3rd or 4th round. So I don't think the sunk cost fallacies principles start to come into play until later. I'm sure some economics dweebs out there can tell me how wrong I am. But for me, the way I operate is like, I'm still playing these early rounders until we get a real sample. However, it's been a disaster. 3% strikeout minus walk for Nola. Velo's down huge. Where are you at? Let me give you the matchups. It's Colorado and the White Sox both at home.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry. Like, if you can't start versus Colorado, not in Coors, but yep. Colorado's in your home park. And the White Sox, who I just mentioned, like, have maybe the worst lineup in baseball. They don't, because the A's still exist. But
true.
It's pretty.
A's might be better. A's might be
I don't know. They just put Brent Rooker on the IL. So
Really? What happened?
He got some. It's an abdominal strain, but
he
like
couldn't hit the IL before the Detroit series. He owned us, dude.
He
freaking wrecked us.
I'm surprised they haven't just DFA'd him for wearing a wristband. Because Oakland is petty like that. It's the pettiest shit terrible. I've ever seen.
By the way, 282 wOBA for White Sox, 279 for Oakland. 261 for Miami. They're the worst. No, but listen, if you can't start Nola here,
then there's no business being on your team. Like, it's
you just, really should come.
You have to start him. Like, and I am not in the same camp as you of like, hey, you throw the prices out, but like, this is one, like, I'm sorry, like, if you can't start any pitcher on this 2-step against the Rockies on the road and the White Sox team, like, then they have no, I don't care who the pitcher is. They have no business being on your team.
I fully agree. I think you have to.
I would start you versus the Rockies on the road and the White Sox.
I think I could do it. The Rockies on the road, meaning home for me.
Yeah.
The Rockies are the ones on the road. Sorry. It's just a little confusing. But yeah, you got to go with Nola here. I know.
As Nick would say, Rocky Road.
Rocky Road. Hold your nose and do it. And we'll reassess after this week. If it's 2 more duds.
Yeah. If it's 2 more duds.
Then we're really looking at some trouble.
A week from Monday, we're going to be having a conversation.
We're cutting in 10s at that point, I think. And then like sitting in 12s and 15s.
That's so hard to cut Aaron Nola.
I know. Maybe not. But we're definitely sitting at that point if he bombs out this week. Martin Perez goes to the Mets and hosts Boston. You know, you got your upstart Pirates that you love, so they can support him a bit. Usually a guy like this on a crummy team, you know, when they were being a crummy team, you're like, oh God, I don't know if I'm going to get any support. But Martin Perez doing some things early on, looking solid, and has a team that's actually backing him. Is this a sneaky 2-step here?
No, it's still Martin Perez. I don't believe it.
I kind of think it is. I'm kind of in on it for deeper leagues, especially maybe a 12 consideration, depending on what the depth of pitching looks like in the given league. I mean, you get the Mets start. So, you know, usually in a two-step, you want one that you really like to take on a negative one potentially. And this is exactly what you get. You get the Mets, and the price you have to pay is to take on Boston, but you get to take them on at home. He neutralizes their best hitter, Rafael Devers, as a lefty. Neutralizes as much as you can. Rafael Devers is a god. I'm not saying Martin Perez is going to own him.
Here's the thing. Boston is not hitting well against lefties right now, but they did hit lefties really well last year. And the Mets are the fourth best team in terms of OPS against left-hand pitching this year. So I just don't know if the, again, this is like an upside versus floor argument. Like
Boston starts seven lefties. Now three are on platoon, but the guys you're bringing in are Connor Wong, Romy Gonzalez, and Pablo Reyes.
Romy Gonzalez, like, hey, what the hell did I do to you guys?
What, cut shot to him, like, what the fuck? Fuck you, dork. Connor Wong, like, I went yard yesterday. Shut up. But Jaron Duran, Devers, Casas, Yoshida, their four best players, or four of their five, wherever you're putting Tyler O'Neill, are lefties. I think I'm in on this. The part that intrigues me is the part you said about the Yankees or the Mets. I didn't realize the Mets were actually doing some damage against lefties. That's interesting.
The Mets have an 814 OPS versus left-handed pitching this year.
Is it a small sample? Like, are they not?
I'm sure it is faced a lot. Well, I mean, it's not the smallest of samples. 118 plate appearances.
No, I mean, there aren't a lot of teams with over. Well, it's about half the.
About half. So, I mean, it's not a small sample.
I'm kind of in on this. I like this for deeper leagues with Martin Perez. Now, I don't know what his availability is in the main, so it might not even matter. Let me take a look. He's not available in mine. Martin Perez is 60%, so plenty of availability. I think I would look at this. I think this has some potential to it, despite the performance of the Mets. Is Alan Winans a lefty? Did they just build up their... No, he's a righty, right?
No, Winans is ready.
I was just wondering, because I was wondering if they built up their lefty bona fides there just yesterday by cooking him. but no, I think, you know, I understand there's downside with Martin Perez. If the Pirates weren't playing so well, I don't think I'd be as in on this. But given that they are, I think that helps boost my confidence.
And they're both in good parks, right? Because you're going to City and then you're home versus Boss. I can understand it. I don't know that I'm willing to do it. It's definitely not a 10 or 12 team conversation. This is a 15 team.
This is a 15 team conversation. I fully agree with that. I got no problem admitting that.
Yeah.
But I'm in.
I can understand.
I think I'm in. I think he's in the mix, right? Not my number one guy to pick up.
I think like you're talking me into it.
I think there's some, you know,
he will be in my Trevor Williams waterfall.
And at San Francisco next week, so he can keep the ball rolling if things go well. So I think I'm in.
San Francisco has to suck against lefties. I'm double checking that right now.
They don't.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Surprising. Mm. But those are all very small samples against lefties. Hell, even the full samples against righties are a little bit small. So we want to be careful not overly using those samples, even though I'm citing them too. So I'm not like saying that you can't or whatever. I'm just saying like, we just got to be mindful of the samples that we're using. All right. Who is next here? We've got, speaking of your Giants, Kyle Harrison and Jordan Hicks at Miami, home to Arizona. Let's start with Harrison first. Where are you starting him, if anywhere?
That's
the reaction he elicits from me too.
Yeah.
I just don't know what to do with him, man.
This is one of the reasons why, like, I just didn't draft Kyle Harrison anywhere. Is because I get to watch him pitch, and he is just a maddeningly frustrating pitcher to watch. Like, like, you see the stuff and you go, oh, okay, like, this is why he was a top tier pitching prospect at one point.
Certainly.
You know, like, I can't remember, was it like a 12 strikeout game last year, like, followed by like a four homer game? Like, that is kind of who Kyle Harrison is. And so, like, the problem with a guy like Kyle Harrison is you see this two-step and you go, well, you've got a bad team in Miami and you've got a good team in Arizona. So maybe I just do it for the bad team. Well, he could get smoked versus that bad team and then dominate that good team. So, like, I don't really
I guess really you still get to the same result, though, then at that point, yeah, right?
But you could also get just smoked by both.
I know, I know.
So, which is the problem. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's giving up over 2 home runs per 9 right now.
He's just crazy volatile is your general point, yeah, which I understand and agree with.
So he's not walking guys. So maybe, okay. I think I would roll with it in 15. I don't know that I'm rolling with a 10 or 10.
So what's been up with that? Because that's been his MO here in the majors so far. It's 52 innings for Kyle Harrison, 7% walk rate, incongruent with everything he did in the minors, where he was a double digit walk rate guy, but at the expense of his swing and miss. So he still has a 25% K rate, which is actually pretty impressive considering his swing strikes all the way down to 9%. Mm-hmm. And it was double digits in the minors. Do you think this is a concerted effort to show more control? Yeah. Okay.
I think somebody in the organization has put him on the Robbie Ray plan. They said, your stuff is good.
Just throw it in the zone.
Stop nibbling and throw it in the zone. And that has led to more home runs, but it's also led to just a minuscule walk rate right now. I mean, he's only walking guys at a 4% clip. So I think there's, when you're pitching in San Francisco, like, this is the place to do that kind of thing, right? Like it works out because the park helps kind of curtail the home runs anyways.
Exactly. Fill the zone in a park that, like, even when they hit it, you might not get burned.
I think part of the problem for me, though, is we talked about earlier on in the podcast, like in September, you've got your lowest, you've got the best time to throw pitchers out there, right? Because mm-hmm. the weather kind of dampers things down a little bit. As things heat up in San Francisco and around the country, is this going to become a 3 homer per 9 issue? And I've mentioned this already a number of times throughout the season and prior to the start of the season. This is a really bad outfield defense.
Yes, it is.
Like a really bad outfield defense.
Yeah,
the infield defense has careful. Gotten better.
Yeah, mostly on the left side, but yes. Mm-hmm.
This is a really bad outfield defense. So
no, you got to be careful. Let's talk Jay Hicks then. Jordan Hicks. It's working, ? Like but same kind of vibe here where the underlying numbers aren't great. Like he cut his walks crazily down to 5% right now through 18 innings for Jordan Hicks. We love that. But a 20% K rate, 8% swing strike rate. He's never been a big swing strike rate guy. He's been able to get some strikeouts in spite of that. But now we're not really getting strikeouts. We're not walking guys. I like that. And we're averaging 6 innings per start. What do we think here with Jordan Hicks? Is this working enough to where he's like kind of a finesse guy? I mean, he still throws hard, but he has like finesse.
This is Dustin stats. May, right? Where like everybody is all like, oh, you look at the gifts and you go, this guy's got strikeout stuff. But then you realize.
Graham Ashcraft does this too.
Yeah.
With his 100 mile an hour nasty sinkers, but mm-hmm. sinkers don't get whiffs. So what do we do with
that?
But
I also think there's a concerted effort right now by Hicks to not throw 103
exactly
in order to protect his arm because he just has which I think is the right decision. Like
I totally agree with it.
How many guys have we seen blow out their arms because they're trying to throw with more velocity? Jordan Hicks is tampering it down, I think, to protect his arm a little bit.
I respect it.
I think it's working. Yeah, it absolutely. Yeah. I think it's working. I think this is gonna work for now. It'll work. Okay. I think it's going to work until he gets hurt again, which I feel like is an inevitability. But
that's unfortunate. I would chastise you for being negative, but
it's just the history.
You're like probably right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too robust a history not to think that, like,
I hope it does work. I hope maybe him.
Yeah. You're not rooting for it.
Yeah. I mean, he's on my team. Like I want him to go out and throw a Cy Young season. But I'm also realistic that Jordan Hicks has always been hurt. So I think this is one of those guys where I think you ride with it for right now and then you worry about June or July or August. But for right now, I think he is kind of in that, could start or should start tier.
I'm not even worried about May right now. Let me just roll with Jordan. If I landed on Jordan Hicks, because I wasn't really drafting him, but if I landed on him, ride this right now.
Leagues.
Very cheap.
Yeah.
I'll take at Miami home to Arizona for sure. I like him more than Harrison right now. Both in 15s, Hicks in 12s. Hicks maybe in 10s, depending on what's available. I don't have a 10 team league right now, so I don't have the best frame of reference there. You probably don't need to start a guy like that, but he would at least be on the table.
Yeah.
All right. Texas. John Gray gets at Detroit, at Atlanta. Then we don't know if it's going to be Lorenzen or Bradford. So I click on Lorenzen's note, and it says, role unclear. Rangers manager Bruce Bochy said Thursday that Cody Bradford will remain in the rotation after Lorenzen is activated, which we talked about. Do not cut Cody Bradford until you know what's going on with him, especially if he smacks Oakland, which he absolutely freaking did. So let's pretend it's Bradford, okay? And we'll worry about Lorenzen later. I think John Gray probably won't get a two-step in lieu of Lorenzen getting one of those starts. And maybe they go a six man this week and they kind of start to sort it out. It should be your boy Heendog, who, if they want to give Lorenzen a chance, which they do, Heaney should probably go to the bullpen. But let's operate on Bradford as a two-step at Detroit, at Atlanta. Is the success he's had and the Detroit first start good enough to take Atlanta?
I don't think so.
Does he stay on the team?
In a 15, you may have to do it just because you don't have any other options or good options. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think he stays on your team no matter where you've got him.
I think so.
But Atlanta scares the crap out of me. Like, it's just so I'm really
terrifying.
Unless you're a top 30, top 40 starter, like, I'm not even entertaining. And while Bradford's been good, like, he hasn't entered that territory for me yet.
No. No, absolutely not. Not even particularly close just yet. And again, I say this as a pro Bradford person here. But I'm glad he's staying in. And again, this is why we say the two-step thing is not a rule. It's not a hard, fast rule where you're automatically cutting them if you're not using them. This is a potential two-step for Bradford that I'm not using because Atlanta is so freaking terrifying. At the same point, I'm not cutting him. I am keeping Cody Bradford. I want to see this through and see, you know, where this takes him and what they do, who they kick out in his favor, because they're saying that he's sticking right now. And if you just follow Lorenzen's path, it would be Cincinnati at home the following week, which I would use Bradford for.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Then our last, never mind. It's Patrick Corbin. The funny thing is Patrick Corbin would be enough to say no, but the matchups.
So I've got a DC that, like, you know, for those people who are angry and yelling for me, talking about how good some of my pitching staffs are. I do have a team in which I have to start Patrick Corbin if I want an active pitching lineup.
Do you want to tell the people, first off, I don't think you should this week. Do you want to tell the people?
And I'm not going to. Yeah.
What he faces here.
He faces at the Dodgers in a home versus Houston. and I'm betting.
That is devastating.
I'm going to double check, but I'm like, this week I had to start Josiah Gray knowing Josiah Gray was not going to be healthy.
That's painful.
This is such a, you know, the crazy part is I'm not in last in this league.
There you go. So you got the rest of your team doing well. How much would somebody have to pay you in a 15 teamer to start Patrick Corbin?
I mean, whatever my entry fee is.
Really? It have to be that much?
Pretty close.
You don't think you'd do it for like a couple $100 and just try to work off the pain?
Well, I mean, in this DC, it is $150. So you give me
$150. Well, that's true. Your entry fee there, yeah.
If someone wants to, Venmo me $150 so I can have my entry fee.
I would want to do it in a team that you're doing well with. So I want to hurt you.
Oh yeah.
So I'm wondering what's the price there in like a main event? Would you do it for $300?
No, no way.
Okay. I don't think I would either.
I'm looking at this team right now and it is unreal. Like how bad like this pitching is right now. My IL currently is Josiah Gray, Braxton Garrett, Eric Swanson, Johan Duran, Joey Cantillo, John Means, Justin Verlander, Luis Medina. and then I also have on my bench Jake Eder, who's hurt in the minor leagues, I've got Jordan Montgomery, who hasn't started pitching yet, or at least not in the majors, Will Warren and Randy Vasquez. I literally do not have...
Brutal.
I have 9 healthy pitchers.
And I would put in one of the injured ones for Corbin.
Yeah, one of them is Patrick Corbin.
Make sure he does not start this week.
Yeah. I actually did start an injured Josiah Gray over Patrick Corbin this week.
I don't blame you. I would have too. Sorry, I'm standing right now.
And that was against my Giants. So I'm definitely not doing it again.
No, at the Dodgers and home to Houston, that is a nightmare two-step. He could give up 20 earned runs. I don't think he'll give up that many, but he could. Poor Patrick Corbin. I love him, but he's not.
It's funny. We were having a number of us in the Discord were having a conversation about Alek Manoah and because there was talk, oh, he could go into, he could make his way into the rotation here at some point. And then he had his first I think it was a high A start where he gave up 6 earned runs, including
who's that? I'm sorry, I was not paying attention.
Alek Manoah.
Oh, yeah. He immediately got destroyed.
He just got, and I think it was in high A or something that. It wasn't even in Triple A.
No.
And so we were chatting about it. And it was I don't know if there's ever been as big of a non-injury fall off as Alek Manoah, but it's Patrick Corbin. Patrick Corbin was a top 20 starter. And then all of a sudden, it happened all of a sudden,
it did. The slider went away. I remember watching it unravel.
Well, and I mean, for me, it's very much the Kyle Hendricks situation. And Kyle Hendricks, I think you just go age finally just caught up with Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're both very similar players to me where I had never been a Patrick Corbin guy. I had never been a Kyle Hendricks guy. And the year I buy in on them,
they both
is the year they just fucking fall apart.
At Corbin, it's after 19. Strasburg also busted after that. Now, Strasburg had a lot of health injuries prior to that. Strasburg, Corbin, not as many. Yeah. But how much do you think it is, putting everything out for that run? He's never the same again.
Yeah, might be.
2020, that's the thing. After that 19 season, they had 2020, which could have been a lighter season, obviously. It was a crazy year, emotionally for everyone. But workload-wise, he only threw 66 innings, but it was bad. And then he's just been a nightmare since then, Patrick Corbin has. Just kind of cashing
his checks.
And
now that we're having the conversation, all of a sudden other names are just pop. Tim Lincecum. Tim Lincecum went from...
Yep.
He was another guy and it wasn't injury necessarily. It was just his body couldn't handle the workload, especially with his mechanics and size.
That was the thing. And they always said that it's just that he had such a good peak, but the
best peaks ever.
It's unbelievable. But people were right that he can't hold up and he didn't.
If this was the NFL, Tim Lincecum's a Hall of Famer, right? Because Hall of Famer. Yeah. For the NFL, they just care about a 2 or 3 season peak.
Well, especially he's kind of the equivalent of a running back there.
Yeah, Terrell Davis. That's
Terrell exactly Davis what I was going to say.
Yeah, guy who was just amazing for 3 years, and then, that was it.
Yeah, and he had a brilliant, 07 to 11, call it 5 years, 69 very nice wins, 1,028 innings of being 37% better than league average, 2 Cy Youngs. Yeah. I mean, that's Lincecum, dude. Stud. So unfortunate.
Multiple World Series.
Evaporated. That's... Yep.
Yeah.
But man, he just evaporated. All right. Well, I'm going to get going. Let's go ahead and wrap it up for the week here. Good luck with these two steps, y'all. Don't get too caught up. Two steps are appealing, but there's downside too. I think sometimes we forget the downside of them. It's different in your points leagues, right? Because they can have a pretty mediocre start and still give you plus points. So I understand opening up
the threshold. Plus the slate runs clean after that week.
Exactly. Head-to-head points, you're it's just for that week.
Yeah.
But in that roto, that 8-bomber can really stick with you. So don't just get too willy-nilly because it's a two-step. Be mindful with your decisions. Are you and Jason getting together on Sunday?
I hope so. He was unable to last week, and I didn't realize it when we were recording. So I believe we are, but not 100% on that.
Well, good luck if you guys do, and you and I will reconvene on Monday.
Take it easy.
Peace.